Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Good morning, New York. Today we have a very special guest, Michelle Carlo, writer, performer. She's lived in the five boroughs of New York City as long as she can remember that pizza cost 50 cents. Probably got a smoke back then. Her book today is The Shadow of Agua, My Life on the Side of the Subway Track, by Citadel Press. Can I say Citadel today? Anyway, we're going to, I'm going to give you a little flavor of Michelle and a little reading from her book before we begin, and then I'll click on Michelle.
The first thing you need to know is that an abuela, or grandmother, is an integral part of every Latino child's life. They provide moral guidance, medical knowledge, and are dispensers of justice. And if you need someone to predict the future, nadie, but no one, can do it like una abuela. And if you want to know more about why my abuela is praying in front of a hospital, go to Chapter 1, A Tale of Two Abuelas. And yes, she wore that, and yes, I saved it. It's 10 a.m. Do you know where your children are? Welcome to the summer of love. When phones were in the kitchen, water came from faucets, and computers were only found on Star Trek, so children actually had to play outside for 10 hours of the day. Tender, innocent, wholesome games.
Marijuana, marijuana, LSD, Rockefeller makes it, Mayor Lindsay takes it, why can't we?
If you want to know more about what other games you played during that infamous summer of love, go to Chapter 13, Just Another Day in the Park. And yes, those are real hippie clothes, and yes, I saved them. Perhaps somewhere in an alternate universe, once high school days are a halcyon, carefree time, filled with fond, gauzy memories of homecoming dances, pep rallies, and proms. But at the high school that I went to, up in the boogie down Bronx in New York City, the two pivotal events that we had looked forward to each spring were called Kill Whitey Day and Kill Black and Puerto Rican Day. And I got my ass kicked on both of them because nobody could tell what the hell I was. Now, if you'd like to know a little bit more about that controlled substance you see I've been offered, just go to Chapter 24, Kill Whitey Day. Oh, yeah. Yes, indeedy, I wore that. And yes, I saved it. Once there was this rock called Seth Horn. Yeah, that's right, Horn. Some of the greatest music of the 20th century. So when I told my girlfriends from St. Peter's Park that I was going to go there, they just said,
"What, are you crazy? You don't know what they do in Manhattan."
Well, not only did I find out what they did in Manhattan, I also may have inadvertently given away one of the hottest trends of the 1980s. If you want to know more, just go to Chapter 27, Heat, Escape from CBGB's Part 1. There's also an Escape from CBGB's Part 2, but that comes later. And yes, I did wear that. All of it.
Okay, there you have it. Just a little taste of Michelle Carlo. I've known Michelle for years, mostly as a performer. Who knew she had these hidden talents here as a writer as well? Michelle, are you online?
Yes, I am. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning, Michelle. I love that little promo that you did, the little teaser, I guess.
Oh, thank you.
It would be called. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I don't know what that was.
That was like a little blurb. Hello to my chat room. Okay. Hi, Betty Jo Tucker from Real Talk is online also. Another radio show is listening to you, Michelle.
Hi, Betty Jo.
That's very good. And hello to Constantine, and guest, whoever you are.
Guest 471. That's a mystery guest.
Mystery guest, yes. So hello to you too. Michelle, you've done great. I can't say the word citadel today. Can you say citadel in Spanish?
citadel. That would be Spanglish.
Yes, that's about the extent of Spanish Michelle and I both speak.
Yes, and sadly, I am quite proficient in Spanglish, not so proficient in Spanish, although I do understand. It's just hard to speak. Like, for example, with my grandmother, she would speak to me in Spanish, and I would answer her back in English. And
me too. My grandmother did not speak a word of English. I am both Spanish and Italian, and you're Irish and Italian.
I am not. I am Puerto Rican 100%.
Speaking Puerto Rican in Italian and Irish neighborhoods. That's what I'm reading here.
yes. No, I am not Italian and Irish. No. That would cancel out the book being Fish Out of Agua, wouldn't it? No. I am 100% Boricua. My mother was born in Corozal, Puerto Rico, and my father's family came from Cabo Rojo. Although we are Mayflower Puerto Ricans.
Yeah, because you came by boat?
Because they came, both sides of the family were here before World War II. My dad's family came here in the late 20s. My mom's family came here in the late 30s.
So for the
Puerto Rican migration, that's considered Mayflower, because most of the emigration happened after World War II.
Yes, it actually happened in around 1949 and 1950 when industrialization became big.
Yes, after the good neighbor policy was now like no neighbor policy.
Yeah. Oh, excuse us, we're at war with Cuba, but we'll go into Puerto Rico as long as we're here.
Yeah, it's the Caribbean. You know, we're all cousins. You know, whatever. I always maintain that anyone whose ethnicity is from any island in the Caribbean is a mix of the conquered and the conquerors.
Yes, and the Tainos.
Because all the indigenous population was there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the three tribes that I know are the Taino, the Caribe, and the Arawak. I know they must be others. I mean, much like there were, you know, the Sioux and the Cheyenne and the Mohawk and the Seminole here on the mainland.
A lot of people don't know that about Puerto Rico, that it did have its own native indigenous people.
Yes, it did. All over the Caribbean, there were indigenous people. And then, you know, the first wave of the Europeans came in, and then the second wave, and then the indigenous people die out. And then they start importing people from places like Africa and China. And Ireland, you know, to work as slaves and indentured servants. And, you know, you wait a couple of hundred years and that's how you get redheaded Puerto Ricans. Or Dominicans with green eyes.
Now, let's talk about A Fish Out of Agua by Sylvia.
Mm-hmm.
Fish
Out of Agua, My Life on Neither Side of the Subway Tracks.
All right, so let's begin, because I don't want to give away the whole book. I love the book, by the way. It was very entertaining. It was very, a very good read. I read it in one day. I couldn't put it down.
Really?
Let's begin with your family. Now, explain to them the both sides of the tracks.
Okay. Well, Fish Out of Agua, the title means you're fish out of water. And I chose the word agua because I thought that was the most recognizable Spanish word in the English language. Everybody knows that agua means water. So Fish Out of Agua means I was a fish out of water. I was a double outsider. I was, as a fair-skinned, freckle-faced redhead, I was an outsider to many people in my family, not all, but many, and I was also an outsider because of my ethnicity, being a Puerto Rican heritage, in the Italian and Irish neighborhoods in which I grew up. So I didn't fit in anywhere. I was constantly balancing this, like, ethnic seesaw trying to fit in.
Let me explain about Michelle to the listeners, in that is she's very fair, well, not very fair skin, moderately fair skin.
Like almond color skin.
With freckles and red hair. Now, where do the freckles come from?
Chromosome 22B. I have no idea. In Spanish, you call them pecas. And my grandmother used to say that I didn't know whether I wanted to be brown or beige. So El Señor, God, made me both.
Now, and the red hair?
Chromosome 23B. I don't know. But you have to have it on both sides of the family. Now, I know for a
because red hair is rare.
Red hair is a double recessive gene. Now, I know that there is Italian on my father's side of the family. There has to be, because my last name is Carlo. That's an Italian last name, right? So I think it is. And my grandmother used to say that somebody was Irish. Somebody's mother-in-law was Irish. So there you go.
Somebody's mother-in-law was Irish, and that was the reason.
Yes, someone's mother-in-law was Irish, and my mother's side of the family, where they all look like Taino Indians, and they're, you know, medium to pretty dark. But somebody was Irish. And by
somebody
the way, my somebody was Irish. And on my dad's side, they were Italian, I think, maybe like originally or something, like hundreds of years ago or something. I have no idea. Who knows what people say?
Yeah, I know.
You
especially,
know,
especially the creative Spanish side.
Yeah.
Now,
we'll begin with
so your family was from the island.
Yes.
Your mother has sisters, but from a different father.
Yes.
Okay.
My mother was from a different father.
Okay.
And the rest of her siblings. My grandmother was married twice.
Yes, your grandmother was married twice. And also, so it could have been on his side of the family. Now, Michelle comes to New York. Everyone who's familiar with West Side Story, this would be about the era you were growing up in. A little.
Yeah, the era I was like born in, yeah.
Yes,
I mean,
there was, for those of you young people today who don't know, who are listening, there was, I mean, when you think interracial tensions, people today think just black and white, but it wasn't, there was a little bit of gray in there too, brown and cocoa, and that was the different minorities, Irish, Italian, Italian, Irish, Spanish, Italian. Each minority was the last, whoever was last off the boat was the new victim, basically.
That's correct. And in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was the Puerto Ricans specifically, and Dominicans to a certain extent too.
They were the last people off the boat.
Yeah.
So they were the last scapegoat.
That's because the
people who came before them felt they were more American than anybody. And this has always been a part of the American culture.
Yes.
Now, for Michelle, having come from that, she did have, it was Spanish on both sides, correct,
yes,
from your book? Yes, both Spanish from both sides. Being lighter than a lot of her family, I assume, and the red hair.
Well,
then you began in school.
Yes.
To feel the pressure,
to feel the difference.
Now, tell us a little bit about that difference.
It's just knowing that you're different. I mean, the thing that was in my childhood a big factor was, like, I didn't know where I fit in. I didn't fit in with my family for various reasons, and nowhere in the outside world. So I drew inward, and part of the way I dealt with that was actually by drawing. I used to draw kittens. That was my way to get to that was like the safe place.
So if I just can backtrack a little bit on your book, because I loved it. But you talked about the loneliness, the isolation.
Yes.
Of not fitting in because you felt you knew you were different, but you didn't know why.
Right. Well, of course you don't know why. When you're that young, you don't have experience or you don't have vocabulary to verbalize those feelings. You just know that there's a hole. And there's something supposed to be in that hole, but there's nothing. And you have to either find the resources to fill it up yourself, or you don't. I mean, I can't really explain it in any way. Just explain
a little bit. You described in your book that you didn't really go out to play a lot.
Not until we moved up to the Bronx. When in my early childhood, I lived with my grandparents for a period of time, and I really didn't. But once we moved to the Bronx, oh no, I was out all the time. I was out in the playground. I was always out because home.
But in search of a friend.
Yes. In search of somebody, just in search of everything. I mean, the whole Fish Out of Agua is like this multi-layered red onion of like search. It's like there's a thread between the relationship between my mother and me, which goes through a lot of twists and turns we won't get into here. There's a thread about how I became an artist. There's a thread that's like all the stories from like my teenagehood and how I got to School of Visual Arts. And there's this whole thread that's about racism. It's about racism that's overt. It's about racism that's covert. It's about people being prejudiced against you. It's about you being prejudiced against yourself.
Yes, that was a big part of it.
Yes. There's a lot of threads there. I mean, there's some of it that's hysterically funny, and there's part of the book that's as serious as a heart attack.
It is multi-layered. Also, the escapism that you found through art was interesting because you started out just drawing. Eventually, you went to the very prestigious Bronx School of Science.
No, that's not correct. I applied to the Bronx School of Science and got in, but I refused to go because I wanted to go to the High School of Art and Design, but missed the test. I went to Lehman High School.
Oh, that's right. You got the mumps.
Right, which was Kilwaidi Day High School and
yes.
Black and Puerto Rican Day High School.
I did
go to school for visual arts, though.
You went to school for visual arts.
Either school,
very hard to get into, not easy. If you know the New York school system, my listeners are all over the world, by the way. If you know the New York or don't know the New York school system, it's not like you just go to a local, your nearest high school or school. You have to apply. You have to give 6 choices, and they can be in anywhere in the boroughs, in the 5 boroughs of Manhattan.
Yeah, I don't know what they call it now. I don't even know if I would have made school of visual arts. If I was 18, 19 years old today and yearning to go to that school, I don't know if I could have done it because I didn't take the SATs. I basically had to repeat half my senior year of high school because I messed up.
I remember now. I'm not going to give it away, but there was a very funny tagline to how you got in. But I'm not going to give it away. They have to read the book to find that.
Right.
That was very
definitely
funny. I was laughing about that myself going, I knew that.
I basically got into that school on, like, force of will. Force of will and the grace of El Señor. I don't even, without SATs, without formal training, without anything, I don't know if it could be done today, but SBA saved my life.
And then
it got me out of that neighborhood.
And then you...
it got me out of that
My chat
room
saying something about Juilliard. Constantine, what about Juilliard? I see an arrow in Juilliard. What did you want to know about Juilliard? Yeah, that's a hard school, too, but Michelle, you were living in the Bronx?
I was living in the Bronx.
Living in the Bronx, really just establishing herself. The Kilwaidi Day, which I've seen you perform, for those of you listening, Michelle is also a performance reading artist, but I've seen her perform it, and it's the funniest story. I still remember it. It's in the book. So it's worth getting the book just for I'm telling you, I would buy the book just to hear that story again and again because that was
just too funny.
And the way that you portray all the characters and the situation that happened that one day is just hysterical. I want to say before I forget, if you want to find out more, connect with Michelle, go to www.michellecarlo.com.
Yes.
And follow The Fish on Facebook at www.facebook.com. Fish Out of Agua. You can find it. It's up there.
There is a Fish Out of Agua. I don't understand what is happening. Every time I...
Hello? Are you touching it with your cheek?
Maybe. I'm holding it.
Oh, one of our listeners in the chat room went to Juilliard. Oh, good.
Oh,
for you.
That's cool.
Maka
awesome.
Constantine.
But yes, there is a Fish Out of Agua Facebook page. You can definitely join that. And on my website, www.michellecarlo.com. You can find out, there's links to purchase the book on online websites such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million. There's a calendar where I have my monthly appearances that's updated every month.
That's right. Wait, slow down, Michelle. That's right. You have an upcoming performance, don't you?
Yes, I have an upcoming performance this coming Monday, December 20th. The show is called New York Confidential, Stories Exposed, and it's in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, at a place called The Cove, which is on 106 North 6th Street. And it's Monday, December 20th at 7:30 p.m. The show is hosted by a genius storyteller named Eugene Ashton Gonzalez, one of the hot new young storytellers that have burst onto the scene. And there's a fabulous lineup. It's going to be a great show. I think Julia Rossi from Strip Stories is in it. Peter Aguero from the BTK band is in it. And I'm in it. And the theme is legacies, how we left our mark on something or how something left their mark on us. So it's going to be an excellent show.
And so, okay, so there we have it. There's some upcoming shows. And for more information, go to www.michellecarlo.com. Also, now let's get back. You went, you're a kid. You're getting in high school. You start to go, hey, there's a world outside of the Bronx. Tell us what
happened. Well, going to School of Visual Arts showed me that there was a world outside of the Bronx. You have to understand, the neighborhood that I went, that I lived in, people don't think of New York City as being provincial, but a working class neighborhood in the boroughs is about as provincial, or can be as provincial as the smallest small town. There were a couple of people that in my neighborhood we would call going into Manhattan, going downtown, like for shopping and things like that. and they were considered to be outcasts. One time, a girlfriend took me to CBGB's, and basically we got thrown out of there because we were such idiots. We were just so uncool. That's a whole story. It's called Heat, how I got thrown out of CBGB's. I was such a nerd. And, like, you know, people my age were into the punk scene and hanging out. And years later, I met a woman who I'm very good friends with now. And you might know her, Nancy. Her name is Marie Mundaka. She also came from Surf Reality. And
oh,
she
wow.
was 15. She was she's like a couple of years younger than me. And she was hanging out there. And she was from Staten Island. So she was cool. And I was not.
Well, there was.
I was
you don't have that these days. I mean, now I would say, because, you know, Surf Reality, always one of our favorites,
yes.
Jenny Pritchard and Robert Pritchard, that you wouldn't have that. I don't really find that. I mean, you have your poetry slams, you have your reading rooms where people do readings of their work, but you don't have, there was in the 80s, such an avant-garde, anything goes, do whatever you want, it's theater. And you don't have that anymore. You have pristine humor. Pristine,
yes,
people getting ready, just doing art to get discovered, not to, as Stanislavski said, love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art.
Well, everything now is increasingly becoming branded. I mean, when you think about it, when we were in college, they were manufactured pop stars then, of course. I mean, come on, Menudo, you know, right? You know, the boys on the kids on the block, the one that Mark Wahlberg or Donnie Wahlberg was in was the New Kids on the Block. We knew, okay, they were like manufactured pop stars. I mean, in the 60s, the Monkees were manufactured pop stars, but it wasn't to the extent that it is today. Like, I think
as well as performance artists, you would not have a Steve Martin come out of nowhere these days,
or an Andy Kaufman,
or a Lily Tomlin.
Correct. No,
because standardized comedy.
You know what they would say about Lily Tomlin? She too ugly. That's what they would say about her. You know,
and she performed at the Bitter End on Bleecker
yeah.
Street,
and
she and
she's
perform-
amazing. She's brilliant.
But that's what I'm saying. So in that vein, Michelle does readings of her work and sometimes performs as her alter ego.
Yes, I had an alter ego called Carmen Mofongo. And Carmen Mofongo was the recreation of Carmen Miranda for our generation. She was the Lower East Side's one and only Latin lady with stuff on her head. And I performed this at Surf Reality. I did this character in many permutations. I did it as a solo performer. I did it in plays and sketch comedy, as a variety show host, and also as a burlesque MC. And now she's in semi-retirement because somewhere around the mid-2000s, I discovered storytelling. And started doing that as my art form, and through storytelling from the moth slams. The moth is a
Explain
New York City.
The moth.
You can go to themoth.org. It's a New York City-based storytelling organization that started about a dozen years ago with these little competitions that are kind of like poetry slams, but they were called story slams. And it was founded by the author George Dawes Green, with the concept of, like, just being on someone's porch in the summer and, you know, sharing short personal stories while the moths were fluttering around the citronella candles. So he came from Georgia, I believe, or Alabama, and he wanted to bring that here to New York, you know, for, I guess, his writer friends or whatever. And they started at the New Rican Poets Cafe these storytelling competitions that they called slams. So 10 people, I mean, whoever was there would put their name in a hat, and they would pull 10 names out one by one, and you wouldn't know the order, so you wouldn't know if you were going to get up until they called your name. And when they called your name, you went on stage, and you told a short 5-minute story based on the theme. And the themes could be anything from water to revenge to work to holidays to family, anything.
But you would know in advance what the subject was going to be.
You would know in advance what the subject was, and you'd have a little time to prepare it. But you had to get up there and just tell a story. It could not be a stand-up routine. It could not be a collection of anecdotes. It could not be read or with notes. You had to just get up and be yourself and share something. And once, you know, you did, they judged you like a poetry slam. And I went to one of these on a bet from a writing teacher I had that I could never do it. And, of course, I didn't listen. I put my name in a hat. I got called last, and I won. And I started storytelling. And then after a couple of years, people started asking me, well, you have, like, 20 stories. Are you ever going to write a book? And then eventually I said, oh, well, maybe I should write a book. So I did. And now we have Fish Out of Agua.
And how did that come about? Fish Out of Agua came through somebody saw your work, somebody...
Yes. Well, what happened was in 2007, my life was not going well. My marriage, I was in a 14-year almost 14-year marriage that had broken up a little bit before that. My life was not going well in other areas, and I just realized that if I wanted my life to change, I had to change my life. And I said maybe I should get serious about writing the book. So I joined the writing class. This woman named Jennifer DeMeritt, who you might also know from Surf Reality, who is a published author, Bust Magazine, and many other places, started a writing group out of her apartment. So I joined it, and this was at the end of 2007. So, and I also quit smoking cigarettes. I think that was also pivotal. I did. I quit smoking. A 26-year habit. I finally quit in 2007. It's going to be 3 years next week. Yay! Anyway, yeah. So at the end of 2007, I got serious about writing the book. In April of 2008, I had finished the book proposal. In July of 2008, the day before my birthday, I got my agent. In December of 2008, we started sending the book proposal out. The day before Ash Wednesday, in February 2009, it sold to Citadel, and the book came out August 25th, 2010.
So you wrote the book, then sold the book?
Well, to do a nonfiction thing, you have to create a whole book proposal. So I had to send them 3 sample chapters, a table of contents, and basically selling myself and reasons why they should buy my book.
If you're listening, this is how you do it.
It was the most difficult writing I ever had to do.
Well, the chat room has a question for you. Betty Jo Tucker from Real Talk Blog Talk Radio says, what's harder, writing a book or publishing it?
I would say what's harder is, after you've written the book, publicizing it and getting other people to read it. I thought the hard part was getting all the secrets and like bearing my heart and just getting everything out into the book. I thought
what
that
about,
was hard.
Betty Jo says, I mean promoting and marketing, not publishing.
Yes, that is hard. It's totally hard, because unless you're a mega celebrity, you're just one little piece in the cog of a big publishing place. And yes, the month that your book comes out, they send out press releases to people. You know, they pay for you to have space on tables at bookstores. Actually, I was quite fortunate. Usually they would only pay for 2 weeks. They paid for me to have a table at Barnes & Noble for an entire month because they liked me and my book. But, you know, it's business. And they don't send you on a book tour. One of the things that I want to do in 2011 is I want to bring the fish across the country. I have a list of cities that I want to go to. Boston.
Little Jacqueline Suzanne,
DC,
eh?
Boston, Philly, D.C., Miami, New Orleans, San Antonio, Austin, Chicago, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, L.A. Because the only way the book is really going to sell, the only way
you know
I'm,
that Jacqueline, do you know about
seen,
that? Do you know that, Michelle?
Do I know what?
That Jacqueline Suzanne did that?
No, but I also
that's
heard
how
that
she publicized. She got in a car and drove to, contacted every little bookstore and set up a signing there.
Wow,
she did it that's how she did it for herself.
Well, that, and also I heard that Stephen Elliott, who wrote the Adderall Diaries, was doing readings in people's living rooms for a year. Like, there would be maybe 15 people there, but he'd lug 15 books, and that's how he got the book known, because you have to do it yourself. And when you submitting a book proposal now, and I'm just saying this for nonfiction, that's where my experience, my little bit of experience is, they want to know that you're going to sell your book, because they're not going to do it for you. They're not going to buy your book unless you come to them with a platform. And I didn't even know what the word platform meant back then. I was like, platform? That's what's that, something you stand on when you're not tall enough to see, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, my platform was my 15 years as a performer, as a performance artist, as a comedian, as an actress, because I've also been in independent films, you know, through all that underground theater that we did on the alt-comedy theater scenes,
yes,
of the
reality,
late 90s.
Theater and underground.
Collective Unconscious.
Yeah, we performed most of our lives underground. You realize that?
Yes. Oh, no, getting dressed in basements, getting
physically
dressed.
Physically, underground.
I can put my makeup on in the dark. I can get dressed in a space that a rat can crawl through, literally. I mean, I can... One time I was doing something, and a sandbag landed a foot and a half away from me. I just looked at it and kept going. I mean, you get to the point where nothing fazes you. And I really think that was the best preparation that I could have for becoming an author and taking Fish Out of Agua on the road. So
and now,
what I'm
will
doing,
Fish Out of Agua be on any of the electronic books, Kindle or anything?
Well, I still don't know about that. I'm hoping that Audible.com, I'm hoping that it will be. I would love to read it myself. If anyone's listening, I want to narrate my own book. Come on, a New Yorker's book with my New York accent. Everything would be awesome.
Betty Jo Tucker published two books herself. She had Confessions.
Oh, awesome.
Confessions of Movie Addict. What was the other, Betty, I know you're on the line there somewhere in the chat room. What was the name of the other book? I apologize for forgetting, if you get a chance. And someone's asked, does piracy make it hard nowadays?
Well, I don't understand piracy in what sense.
Well, I guess if you go to shop it around, then someone steals your idea.
You know what? I think you can't worry about that. If somebody is legitimate, they're not going to steal your idea. And besides, your idea is your idea. Like, people used to say to me, wasn't I afraid someone's going to steal Karma Fungo? And I said, no, because that's my idea and my character. And even if someone tries to do it, they're not going to do it as well as I can. Nobody could tell your story the way you can tell your story. And good work is good work. Good work is good work no matter what genre it comes from. And good work is going to be what gets recognized and gets out there. And if you are going to live as an artist, you have to believe that. If you don't believe that, then don't do it. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe that your idea is good enough and is worthy of being out there.
Oh, Betty Jo just told me the other. Betty Jo, you wrote three books altogether, I guess, so Betty Jo knows this. She wrote Susan Sarandon, A True Maverick, and another book, which is her life story. It had
she
to be
wrote,
us. She also
so Betty
said
jo
to you. I don't know if you're in the chat room. She said,
no,
good
I can
point,
see. She
Michelle.
Said, good point. Thank you, Betty Jo. And Betty Jo, you wrote a biography on Susan Sarandon? Wow, that's pretty cool.
Oh,
so,
yes,
anyway,
Betty
yes.
Jo interviews a lot of celebrities on her Real
Talk
Radio show.
That's
so
awesome. Yay.
You should be honored. You have Betty Jo listening in.
Wow,
as well
Betty
as,
Jo.
As Constantine 4A.
Well, I hope both of you could go to my website and click on Amazon and get a copy of Fish Out of Agua, My Life on My Desire to Subway Track.
www.michellecarlo.com.
And you click on the Amazon link on the homepage of my website. It will take you there. And I think if you get it through Amazon, I get like an extra quarter. Woohoo!
Oh, you do? Oh, well,
I think
now
so.
We got to go to Amazon. I think
yeah,
I reviewed your book. If you look there, I think I get my
oh,
your review. If
great.
Not,
yay.
I'll go back and check. But I thought I did. I
yes.
read a lot of books.
Anyway,
week.
My plan for my dream, my wish, my plan, my goal for 2011 is to the cities that I mentioned is to take Fish Out of Agua there and do a reading or a storytelling performance or do something in someone's living room. And in all the cities I mentioned, I know people there. Like, for example, in Boston, I have a very good friend that I used to do moth stuff with, and we're actually working on getting me up there early in the spring. In New Orleans, my ex-husband lives there now, and there's actually a big Hispanic theater community there. Okay, he, you know, he can't get away from Puerto Ricans, right? We got divorced, and he's still around Puerto Ricans. It's hysterical. That's his karma. Yeah, be around Puerto Ricans for the rest of his life.
Now that you mention that, you know, it would make a good touring show.
Yes. Well, actually, one of my other goals for 2011 is to create an hour-long solo show, like monologue from the book. And right now, I'm exploring different themes of like
Michelle?
Which is.
Michelle,
yes.
If I may
yes.
pause you for a moment, do you have the book with you right now?
Yes.
All right. Would you just look at the book, go there, and find maybe just a paragraph or two to share with us? I know I should
okay.
have warned you, but just I mean, every chapter was good to me, so I think it's an easy thing for you. But this is so you people can hear it in her voice and what a touring show might be like with Michelle. As she brings her
okay,
book.
Okay, well, I'll read a little piece from Kill Whitey Day.
Okay.
I mean, that's where I opened
one
the book
of my
from.
Favorites.
I actually opened the book there, so I guess that's karma. Okay. I arrived at school a little past 11 and right away saw something was up. For one thing, there was a phalanx of cop cars around the Westchester Square train station. For another, I heard the yelling from all the way up the hill. And then I remembered. Today was Kill Whitey Day. Now I know that in some alternate universe, one's high school days were a halcyon, carefree time, with fond, gauzy memories of homecoming days, pep rallies, and proms. But at my high school, fondly referred to in those days as Lehman State Prison, the pivotal events that we had to look forward to each day were Kill Whitey Day and Kill Black and Puerto Rican Day. Every year, every school would have its couple of times a year when it would be at war. And as in any war, any unfortunate civilians who found themselves behind the front lines would just have to get by as best they could. Because in the mid to late 1970s, teenage New York was a city divided and ruled from Parkchester out to Morris Park and up to Frog's Neck by the white gangs, the Bronx Aliens and Bronx Ministers, their black and Latino counterparts, the Savage Skulls, Savage Nomads, Mongol Brothers, and biker gang Chingalings claimed everywhere south of Soundview Avenue and west, past Yankee Stadium and Fordham Road, all the way down to the river. And the messed up thing was, you knew exactly when it was all going to go down. The information crossed gang, race, and ethnic lines and flashed through your entire school faster than group text messaging blocks down the campus today. You knew when your kill day was going to be. And not going to school was not an option, because everyone would know you had punked out and your own neighborhood would make you a pariah for not having enough heart to risk getting a beat down with everyone else.
Wow. And it gets, I'm not going to give away how it turned out.
I will say one thing.
Cruises hire authors, too.
Huh?
Michelle.
Pardon?
Cruises. Cruise ships.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You should look into, yes, they hire people who have motivational or, I think it might even make a great motivational tour.
Well, I did do a speaking engagement at a private school, Fieldston. It's a prep school. I did a speaking thing there for Hispanic Heritage Day in October. And here's the freaky thing. Someone had come to my book party and had bought the book and given it to their niece or cousin, and the teenage girl read the book and tracked me down and emailed me and asked me if I would speak at her school.
Wow.
And I was just floored and by her initiative and just, you know, her
well,
manner.
I could see this book definitely having an appeal from teens up. And
yes.
Especially to anyone whose family has ever, which is most everyone, come to this country and or anyone feeling isolated because of the way they look, the way they sound.
Well,
so
it's universal.
Very appealing.
That to me, that is the universal thing about Fish Out of Agua. It's not just a Puerto Rican story. It's not just a New York story. It's a universal around the world story, because there's always a time I believe in almost everyone's life where they don't fit in. And how do you deal with that? Because there's always someone younger or smarter or richer or better looking or who has more toys or a better job or more children or better behaved children. I mean, there are so many ways that a person could have low self-esteem or feel like they don't measure up. And how do you get past that? I mean, sometimes there's bullying. That's a big issue these days for kids being bullied.
Oh,
yes.
Well, that's part of your book. And your book, I'm not going to give anything away, but there's a deeper story within the story. And so you want to get the book, A Fish Out of Agua, again, Citadel Press, and www.michellecarlin.com. You can buy the book on Amazon, correct?
Yes, you can buy the book on Amazon.
And slowly the bookstores, because you're Spanish, you're going to speak fast.
I'm sorry. That's just at a New Yorker. Okay. If you go to the homepage of my website, www.michellecarlo.com, on the homepage there's a link with the book's cover, and it lists 5 bookstores where you can purchase the book online. I believe that they are Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million, and Indie Press. So you can choose any one of them, but I do know if you choose Amazon and Barnes & Noble, I think, like I said, I get like an extra 15 cents.
Extra 15 cents.
Yeah, but right, well, I don't, you know, if you want to be poor, write a book, you know.
I know, actually, a very good friend, Fran Capo, who's written 17 books and was just featured on Betty Jo Tucker's show. She's written 17, and she goes, I'm not getting rich. I'm just writing books.
Well, you know, I've been getting some fish out of agua. Has been getting some really good notice. The Daily News, the New York Daily News, which is a local newspaper in New York City, wrote an article about me. The Wall Street Journal did a profile. Bust Magazine wrote something about me. I recently did a photo shoot for a national magazine that I can't mention yet because it's not going to come out until next year. Penn, they are a literary awards and outreach program. They've reached out to me and asked me to participate in a literary seminar with educators and students next week in February. So I'm getting some nice notice, but It's, you know, it's literary pop. So I'm a writer now. I'm a writer now. Fish Out of Agua has been considered literature. But, you know, to get to that extra level, I need to
But it's
have
available.
The,
you,
public,
the bookstores you mentioned are not just online. Are they available? Can you go to a bookstore?
Yes. If you live in the United States, if you live in New York City, you can walk into any Barnes & Noble and the book will be there. If you live in another city, go to your Barnes & Noble
Betty Jones
or Borders.
In Colorado.
All right, so go to your Barnes & Noble or Borders, and if it's not there, ask for it. They will order it for you.
There
they
you go.
Order
have
it
ordered.
You.
If
yes,
not,
have
you
it ordered.
Can find more information at www.michellecarlo.com. Now, believe it or not, 41 minutes have flown by, Michelle.
Yeah. Well, can I say one thing? Here's one thing. In order for Fish Out of Agua to get, you know, buy Mama a new pair of shoes, get a better brand of cat food for my kittens. Okay. What I need is more recognition. And to that end, there's an awards thing called the ECNY Awards, which is Emerging Comics of New York Awards. And a few people have written in Fish Out of Agua to be nominated for Best Book.
Oh, so, I think I nominated
show. And go back and nominate my book.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
Yes.
My book, and go back and vote for me and my TV show and my radio show.
I definitely will. And the deadline is midnight of tonight. Midnight of tonight, Friday, December 17th.
Let's say that again.
So
ECYN?
No, I'm going to say it. It's go to www.ecnyawards.com/nominate.
Okay.
www.ecnyawards.com/nominate. Put in your email address, scroll down till you see Best Book, and then type in Fish Out of Agua by Michelle Carlo, and you will help my cats eat better cat food. Thank you.
Get that book also. Oh, thanks for voting for me, Betty Jo. And also vote for Nancy Lombardo under Best Podcast Series.
And the Nancy Lombardo Show as well.
Also, Best Event, Momedy. Hey, Michelle, I'm going to honor you by playing you out on a song by the Rock Bottom Remainders. Do you know who that is? Do you know who they are?
No, actually, I do not.
It's Stephen King, Amy Tan, Dave Barry, all authors in a band. So everyone, go get a Fish Out of Agua by Michelle Carlo.
And you can contact me through my website. Bring me to your city.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll do a reading in your living room.
Just contact her online. And thank you for being a guest, Michelle Carlo.
Thank you, Nancy. You're awesome.
And we're going now to play her out on some of the most famous writers in America today singing.
Happy holidays, everybody. Thank you.
You can't judge an apple by looking at the tree. You can't judge a honey looking at the bee.
Hey Steve, you can't judge a daughter from looking at the mother.
You can't judge a book now looking at the cover.
Like a farmer.
But I'm a lover.
I guess you can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
I can't judge sugar looking at cane.
I just try and judge a woman by looking at a man. You can't judge a sister by looking at the brother.
You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Can't you see how you misjudge me? I may look like a farmer, baby,
but you're a lover.
Can't judge a book now looking at the cover.
Thank you. on. You can't judge a right by looking at the wrong. Can't judge one looking at the other. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Can't you see how you misjudge me? Hey, you know, you look like a writer.
I'm a lover.
Can't judge a book now, looking at the cover.